Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumpin' James Herbert. I almost just said the wrong name for myself there. I almost said I'm James Herbert, which would have been inaccurate. Yeah, would have been very inaccurate.
Yeah, that would have been totally wrong.
I wouldn't say my brain's working great today.
No.
No. I struggled a little bit.
Freudian? I don't know. Maybe you're just constantly imagining.
Maybe I'm thinking like...
Living in Toronto.
Yeah, maybe I'm just thinking like, I wish I was James. Maybe it's like a being John Malkovich kind of thing.
Well, because like you can't get like bacon poutine over there in Miami.
Oh my God. I don't even think they've heard of bacon poutine in Miami.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand. There's no other reason why you'd want to be me. I can't imagine.
No. Toronto. So, it's the capital of the world.
We got a question after we posted the last podcast asking how I became known as Jumping James Herbert. Like, there was supposed to be some sort of interesting story.
I think I just picked a word that starts with J.
That's fascinating.
I kind of feel like that's the reason. I don't think I have a good reason. I was just like, oh, there's a J in Jumpin'. Maybe I was like watching Jumpin' Jack Flash or something. I don't think that was the case, though, because you don't remind me of... Who's in that? Whoopi Goldberg? Like, you're not a Whoopi.
I'm not? I'm offended.
I wouldn't say you're the Whoopi Goldberg of this endeavor.
I mean, sometimes I jump around.
You've jumped before.
Pretend to be Whoopi Goldberg.
Sure.
So.
But really, you're just ostensibly like doing a Lil Wayne impersonation.
Oh, my entire life is a Lil Wayne
impersonation. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, or he's kind of impersonated you.
If you want to give me that kind of credit, I don't know.
I think I should just be properly dissecting what he does.
Yeah, why aren't you?
I don't know. Speaking of dissecting, that Anthony Davis did some dissecting last night and yet didn't win, so none of it mattered.
is that how we analyze
it? I don't know. I saw something, I'm like, well, they didn't get the win. I'm like, dude, he had 36, 14, 7, and 9.
And that's a lot of numbers right there.
It's a locker combination.
Yeah.
It's how you break into a safe.
I think the way he was blocking shots, he could break into pretty much any safe.
I think he could too. And the thing is, it's like he didn't just have that crazy stat line because of the double overtime.
He was pretty much there.
Yeah, he was like 3 assists and 2 blocks away with like 9 minutes left in the fourth.
Yeah, that was nuts. I mean, I was at a different game, but that was one of those occasions where like you put League Pass on your laptop while sitting on press row and you watch both at once because you don't want to miss a game like that, a performance like that. That was crazy.
For A Wolf Among Wolves, I had the recap duty last night, and I'm just going to say the Spurs-Wolves game wasn't the closest game I've ever watched. I think the Spurs went by 39 at one point. It was relatively close in the first half, but the Wolves were without Rubio, Garnett, Anthony Bennett, Peck, Gary Neal, Shabazz, Robbie Hummel.
Isn't that their whole team?
Yeah, it was most of the team.
Wiggins played, right?
Yeah, Wiggins played.
Did he play all 48 minutes?
He played like 40 minutes. He played a long time and probably too long, but they also only had 8 guys.
Yeah. He was playing 40 minutes even when they had a full roster.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I think really just surprise me.
Let's throw Wiggins out there and see if we can break his ankle or something. But it was like, I don't know, like it was halftime and I saw like the League Pass alert, Anthony Davis is murdering everybody. And so I flicked over and started watching that, and then I was like, "Oh, I forgot about the Wolves game." And then kind of just looked down and it had already been like the lead was 11 at half. I think it was already up to like 25. And I was like, oh, I don't really need to flip over for a while. I think I'm okay. And just watch the end of that game. The thing that is so frustrating about the Pelicans is that, and even like at one point he scored 10 straight points for them, I think, like down the stretch, like maybe spanning fourth quarter and overtime. But like towards the end of overtime, didn't really go to him. Towards the end of double overtime, didn't really go to him. And it's like, I know for sure on one play he had Danilo Gallinari at the end of overtime guarding him. Gallo's a fine defender. Like, it's not like he's some bad European defender. He's a good defender. He's not long enough to bother.
He's a good European defender.
Yeah, he's not long enough to bother an Anthony Davis shot. He's just not. And I'm not saying ISO for him and get out of the way, but you can run something for him. And instead, Tyreek dribbled to the rim. He missed a layup attempt that wasn't very good. And people are like, well, he still got a shot at the rim. It's like, yes, but the process, like, you get
there
Andy,
was a Tyreek
Davis
Evans
is killing.
Shot. Yeah. There was one shot. It was like a 17-foot runner from Tyreek Evans going left to right.
I'll just assume it went in.
It definitely did not. And this was, I believe that was in the first overtime. I could be wrong, but it was definitely near the end of that game. And I think I said some curse words while I was watching a different game, ostensibly. But yeah, even like Tyreek Evans and Eric Gordon made some like difficult shots and made some big plays down the stretch.
Oh yeah. I mean,
and
there
like,
was...
that's fine, but it's just, you don't want, like you said, it's the process.
Yeah.
Like,
and that,
if
I
you're
think...
a Pelicans fan, you're not even that thrilled about those shots going in, are you?
I mean, I guess because it's a playoff race, you'll take whatever you can get, but,
sure.
But there was one play where I think Tyreek dribbled the life out of the ball, kicked it to Eric Gordon, and Eric Gordon hit a three, which, great, but on that entire possession, Anthony Davis didn't touch it once. And I just, you know, you
and
can...
Eric Gordon
you,
shot like 5 for 18.
Yeah, and like you can overanalyze stuff and pick stuff apart unnecessarily. I just feel like it's not like Anthony Davis was having an okay night, and you, like he was murdering jump shots, oops, shots around the basket, like everything. He was so good, and you know, I know we don't believe in the hot hand, but I believe in the hot hand and feed him,
too.
Feed the guy. And but man,
he was making some of those jumpers. I mean, it's absolutely unblockable because of how long and how tall he is, and it's like Dirk shots, right? Like
yeah,
those contested twos that most players you want them to stay away from. And he couldn't do when he came into the league. It's incredible.
He really does have a really nice touch. You know, it still feels like his offensive game needs a lot of improvement because you just don't see him. I don't feel like we see him doing a whole lot, and yet the production makes that statement sound really stupid because he just produces no matter what they ask him to do. But it doesn't feel like they're running anything really through him, if that makes any sense. Like, I know, like, I'm not saying he's not a good offensive player. It just feels like, oh, he could improve it so much more. But, like, his production's insane.
His production's nuts. It doesn't, like, he'll get the ball on the block. He'll get the ball on the high post. He'll get offensive rebounds. Like, he can do a bit of everything. But at the same time, you kind of wish that the system was more tailor-made for him, rather than he just kind of ends up getting his touches and getting his points in like weird ways. Like,
right.
It still doesn't seem like this is an Anthony Davis team, even though it is clearly his team.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's probably a much smarter way of putting it than me saying, no, he's not that good on offense.
No, but that's clear. You clearly didn't mean he's not good on offense.
Yeah, no, it just seems like he could do so much more. Yeah,
yes.
He could do so much more. And that's the scary thing with him is that, he has so much to – like, he's still not – even though he had 7 assists, but he's not really a good passer. I think he's –
and he's not asked to facilitate very
much. Yeah, well, I think that's what it is. He's got good instincts, but he's not asked to do it enough. Like, if you had him in a high-post offense – like, if you had him in, like, Rick Adelman's offense when it's running the way it's supposed to, he could – like, you feel like he could just pick anybody apart in any way imaginable.
Just when he's on the attack – if you get him on the move or if you get him even with the ball in his hands, because he came up a guard, he's still like a weirdly good dribbler for a guy that doesn't actually dribble that much. Like when he's really attacking, he can finish or he can pass it. Like he's like, he doesn't seem like he's that skilled, I guess, but like it's there. Like the stuff is all there. It's just that his role is this amorphous thing that isn't really, it's hard to really figure out what the Pelicans' plan is on every possession, especially when late in the games, often they kind of ignore him, despite Monty Williams saying to the press numerous times this year, like, he needs 20 shots a game, he needs the ball in his hands and all of that. It's just the team's sort of weirdly constructed.
Yeah.
And I think like Evans has had some nice passing games this year.
He has. He's actually been a lot better in that role than you would think.
Right, but it's still just... it's still, like I said, it just doesn't feel like this is the optimal situation for him yet. Even though, like, it's weird. Like, we criticize the hell out of this team, but I think if you told us what their record would be right now, Like, we would say, oh, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, you definitely take that.
Like, they're right there in terms of they're right behind the Thunder. That was a bad loss.
Oh, it's a brutal loss. Like,
to Denver, but also, like, the other team that was – like, let's take a second. How much were the Nuggets dogging it for, like, 90% of this season? Like, watching Kenneth Faried, the energy that he had, and then remembering all the comments that Brian Shaw had about him throughout this season while he was coaching him, I felt like what – if Brian Shaw is watching this game at home, like what, how many profanities are being hurled towards the TV?
It's fun. It's funny too, because like Denver, you and I were joking before we started recording that, like it's Friday or they're in Miami on Friday. And I'm like, I don't know that I want to watch this game. I don't know that I want to go. I may just stay home and watch some college basketball. But as much like as chaotic as they've been, they're 26-41. That doesn't sound that bad. I mean, it's not good by any means. They have to win. They have to win out to be a 500 team. But you know, like just with how bad they've been, how much turmoil there's been, like you're kind of. I just feel like it's a surprise they have over 20 wins.
Yeah, because it just feels like it's been this horrible disaster.
Right.
They fired the coach. They traded some of the players, and we were saying like a lot of people have said. I think you and Matt said it like right at the deadline day. Like, why didn't they trade more of them? Why didn't they just set the entire thing on fire? And it's crazy. Like, they've won four in a row now. Like, they've beaten, like, Warriors and the Hawks. And, like, the Pelicans win isn't an easy win either.
Like, no, in New Orleans, like, that's not an easy win.
Yeah, like, they're kind of playing spoiler right now. And they're actually sort of fun to watch. Like, they're running. They're putting up over 100 points pretty much every game under Melvin Hunt. I think maybe literally every game under Melvin Hunt. And, you know, it's been, like, it's sort of meaningless now because I'm not sure how much you can carry over momentum this season when you kind of assume that there are more roster moves coming and perhaps a coaching change, though I'd say Hunt is making a pretty good argument for staying.
Right.
I feel like this is a lost season anyway, but it is just, like, March basketball is weird because you sort of want the playoffs to come, but there are always a couple teams that are out of it that just go on these weird little winning streaks and kind of scare the teams that are actually playing for something.
Yeah, and it like kind of tricks you into like, oh, they could be building something towards next year.
Well, with some teams they could be.
Yeah.
But I don't see Denver as one of those teams. I see like Indiana as one of those teams.
Right. Because
they'll be in the playoffs probably, but I just think, you know, I mean, we were going to talk about Paul George. Like it doesn't seem like he's coming back this year, but I think if they have a decent run now, they'll probably bring back a pretty similar team. And to actually accomplish something this season when nobody expected them to do anything like that. I know the East is weak, but I mean, they've won 13 of 16. Like, they're playing pretty well.
I think they have the best the best net rating since the All-Star break.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know that the Jazz are the only team with a better defense since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's Vogel, man. Like, it's Hibbert, it's, like, Hill. Like, they have...
Yeah, I think we talked about it Friday, right? Like, kind of like... Yeah. Or they have the second best net rating. The Cleveland Cavaliers moved ahead of them since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, he won't get Coach of the Year, and he shouldn't. But he's got to be, like, in that third spot. Or, like, in the conversation for that third spot for Coach of the Year. Because... just the injuries, and they were so banged up to start the season.
And it was their whole roster, basically.
Yeah, like, and he just kept plugging away and kept finding ways to grind out victories, and they were kind of spoilers on the road. And
I think we laughed at the idea of them making the playoffs.
Oh, because we just thought almost the offense was so bad. Yeah,
yeah.
And now, like, they've kind of put things together, and you remember that this was... Yeah, you know, they were chaotic as well last year, but this was a really good team for most of last season.
Which was the number one seed.
Yeah.
Like, I realize that it's like Stevenson was a big part of that team too, and obviously George is their best player. But there's real defensive talent on the team, and it's not... And I think it's like nobody talks about Hibbert anymore because nobody really talks about the Pacers.
He's a free agent, isn't he?
I think he's going to be a free agent.
Yeah,
and
that's an interesting situation.
He's still, like, teams just don't score at the rim against them.
No,
and it's still all based on that. Like, he had to do so much work defensively always.
Right,
but he also had these elite defenders on the perimeter. Now, like, with George and Stevenson gone, like, they're there's even more funneling people to Hibbert, and he's just doing it.
Right.
Like, he gets, and he's not this great story anymore. He's not this up and coming player. This like, oh, he might win defensive player. Like, nobody talks about him, but he's still just so great at it.
No, he's over scrutinized at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he was picked apart too much because he was like an odd big man, right?
Like, and I think because we saw like these bursts of like, oh, he had 25 points. He should be this elite offensive player.
Right.
But that's not who he is, right? Like, yeah, he's still good.
Right. Yeah. Opponents shoot 42.1% at the rim against him.
Yeah. That's
Of the main guys getting, you know, attempts against them at the rim, I think only Serge, Rudy Gobert, and that's kind of it, are better than him.
Yeah.
Andrew Bogut, but he's, you know, limited minutes and everything. But yeah, like, it's, he's still one of those guys. Speaking of Serge Ibaka, this is just coming across. Looks like he needs a knee procedure to alleviate some soreness that persists. It's not clear how long Serge Ibaka will be sidelined following the injury. This is coming from Royce Young of ESPN.com, formerly of CBSSports.com. Thunder have not confirmed.
Royce Young he has delivered so much bad news.
Yeah, like
over the course of the season.
Like, let him have a good story. Like, let him break the news that, I don't know, they moved on to the finals or something. I guess you don't break that news, but let him have something. We should let him have that press release, though.
Yes. No, I hope this isn't a serious thing.
Yeah, like, if it's just cleaning out, you know, that can be a couple of weeks. If it's something serious, then, you know, it could be, I guess, the rest of the season. I don't know. There's not that much time left in the season.
Yeah.
We have a month. And,
like, we don't know exactly when KD is back either.
And yeah, it's sometime just gonna be this the week, kind of thing. Supposedly. Yeah.
Like, if he's out for a little bit, like, it's just going to be difficult for them to, you know, go in rhythm to the playoffs, right? Like, I think the one thing, obviously, the move they made at the deadline, like having that extra big man in Cantor there, that helps. And he's been pretty good. Like, offensively, he's been solid for them. And I think they have a kind of embarrassment of riches in the front court with the way McGarry's played. And obviously, Adams is back from injury now.
Right.
And Collison is shooting threes now, which is cool. But none of those guys does what Ibaka does.
Right.
And I think, like, even, like, take Cantor. Like, part of the reason why he's been good is they've pretty much played him with Ibaka exclusively. And not that Adams is a bad rim protector or a bad defender, but I think, you know, they will obviously miss the way he affects the game on both ends, because there isn't another dude who can shoot threes and block shots like him and protect the basket.
Right, they're not that many guys in the NBA, period.
Yeah,
in
no, NBA that's what I mean. Like, there's not another guy that does that. That's why he's so great. I just, you know, I love watching the Thunder, and I'm excited about what they could potentially do if they're healthy in the playoffs, even against the best team in the league. But it's just, like, I'm just kind of bummed out. Like, this season, it's just this one thing after another.
Yeah, and I don't want to, I don't want to freak out or anything, but it does kind of seem like since that finals appearance, like, it's just one thing after another derailing what should be kind of a dynastic situation. And not that's going to, they're going to break up in 2016 or anything. Like, I don't have any clue
it's
about
too
what's
early.
Gonna, I honestly don't really care right now. Like, I just kind of want to, I don't like looking ahead that far, because it's just a bunch of speculation. It doesn't do anything for me. But it is kind of a situation where you just, like, man, just let them be healthy so we can see another run and see,
exactly,
and see how good they still are. Like, I know they don't have Harden anymore, but they're still good enough to.
I just would have liked to see last year if they had Ibaka at full strength in the playoffs. Like, I just would have liked to see that.
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't have mattered. You know,
it might not have, but we still could have got, like, six or seven games of full strength Thunder against full strength Spurs, and that would have been fun.
Yeah, that would have been great.
And I mean, it's not to say, like, we don't know the extent of this. They could be fine once they get to playoff time. But it's just weird. Like, maybe this is Lil B's fault.
I keep forgetting he's a thing until something happens with Durant.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this isn't technically with Durant, but,
yeah,
you know, it affects Durant.
It does affect Durant. It'll be interesting to see, you know, depending on how long he's out, how they do fill that void, because, you know, Steven Adams can be a really good defender, or at least a rim presence. They have depth, like, you know, you mentioned Cantor. They have McGarry bringing Durant back from injury.
Like Durant can, play the four.
Yeah, like they have the depth to handle it if Nick Collison, obviously. But yeah,
like last year
does
I remember writing
things.
Like when Ibaka went out, like they need to play Perry Jones, and like now that guy is just not even talked about. Like they have more dudes now. Like with Cantor and McGarry, like they have depth. Whether or not they can finish the season as strong as they need to, we'll see. But they're just like, this is the deepest team that they've had in a long time.
Agreed.
And that's why if they are at full strength, it's going to be really exciting. Like, I mean, I've been like just thinking about that matchup with the Warriors is nuts to me, because that is better than, like, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but like that's a better series than like Hawks Cavs to me. Like that's the best thing than anything the Eastern Conference can do, and that's going to happen probably in the first round.
That is a hot take.
Is it?
I don't know. It felt hot.
I think it's like warm.
It felt like there. I mean, it's above room temperature. I know that.
There you go.
It's hot enough that a waiter would say like, "Oh, be careful, the plate's hot." Like it's
DR
not gonna. It's
waiters
not gonna,
maybe.
You
know, might
and speaking
say
of
that.
Speaking of the waiters, I was just looking up. I was trying to find like the Serge Cantor duo numbers, and instead, I found that one of the most effective two-man combinations, and I'm assuming Russell Westbrook's on the floor with them. But one of the most effective two-man combinations since the All-Star break is Anthony Morrow and Dion Waiters, which is a net rating of plus 19.1.
Weird.
And it's like 188 minutes. Like, it's a significant number of minutes. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's the eighth, highest combination of minutes since the All-Star break for any two players.
I'm calling
team.
Scott Brooks right now.
Just say,
change the starting lineup.
You need to sit Russ. And you need to unleash the Waiters Morrow combination.
Yes, Dion Waiters is the JJ Barea of the championship winning Mavericks or something.
Russ and Dion, the third most used duo since the All Star break, plus 6.8.
Hey,
per 100, that's not bad.
There it is.
You'll take it.
It's weird because like you watch Dion and like I find him hilarious on that team because he just takes those step back jumpers and he's constantly jumping up and down trying to get the ball or calling for the ball when Westbrook has it, and you just think like this isn't what we were hoping for here, right? Like I don't have them in front of me, but the shooting percentage I don't think was good the last time I looked at it. It's weird, like I've loved the moves that they've made. Like I love the deadline move, and I think this team is a lot better than it was at the start of the season. But I wonder about his long-term future there. But at the same time, like, with what you're telling me, like, I mean, clearly just watching, like, he's not killing them. Like, if they're outscoring guys with him and Morrow, who, like, that's not who you want as your wing defenders. But if they're outscoring teams with that, sure.
Yeah, by all means.
I guess.
play the right combinations. And I said earlier that Hibbert was a free agent this summer. He has a player option for next year.
Yeah.
At 15.5 million.
Yeah, like what? I mean, the latest news on George is, I mean, there was a player on the team who said without, it was like an anonymous player, said he's not even close to 100%. And I think the Indianapolis Star said the player expressed strong skepticism that George would come back this season. Like, does this surprise you at all? Were you hoping that he would come back and they'd be a contender or what?
No, I mean, I guess I was hoping he'd come back just because I would hope he'd be healthy. But I didn't expect it by any means. And in fact, like, I feel like it was maybe a month ago where they were like, hey, Paul George might come back in the middle of March.
Yeah.
And my initial reaction was like, great, but why?
Yeah.
You know, like, I just, why push it? Yeah, I mean, and obviously if he's cleared medically and everything's fine and there's no reason for him not to play, then yeah, you can start working off some of that rust. But to me, it was just like, just sit the rest of the season, have the whole summer to make sure you're strong enough, and then come back next year and you'll be fine. Or, you know, I would assume you'd be fine. And so, no, this doesn't shock me at all. I mean, to me, this just sounds like, oh yeah, gruesomely broke his leg in what, July or August or whenever it was, he shouldn't be playing this season.
Yeah, like I always thought this was a year-long thing. I was surprised. I mean, I interviewed him in New York, and he had said then, like, it was the same day that he had said that the mid-March thing, and I think targeted that Celtics game that just happened. But I interviewed him that day as well, and he said, if he's coming back and it's, like, right at playoff time, like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's like, that just seems like too much to work back for a team that was so chaotic anyway.
And it's just a lot of pressure on him to perform in that type of atmosphere, in that type of situation. It's looking at, like, now, even if he theoretically was to come back, like, right now, which he's obviously not ready to do that, but even if he was, this is a team that has found itself, has found a rhythm, and now you're looking at integrating a guy who is going to have the ball, like, 25% of the time that your team is playing, and defensively, if he's quick enough, fine, but he's probably not going to be the same guy that he was before, and he's going to probably be trying to do the same things that he did before, and there's just an adjustment period, and I think that's a huge thing to try to do with even this amount of time left, and if it's not now, then it's hard to imagine them doing it in, like, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, especially when they're trying to fight for that playoff spot, because, yeah, they're in the seventh seed right now, but they're not that far from being in ninth or tenth because of the way that race is going.
Right, and it does just seem like, maybe he comes back in the first game, he has this amazing game, we're like, oh, Paul George is back, but there's always, like, you know, you can be fueled by that adrenaline and caught up in the
we
moment.
We see that
but,
all the time.
Yeah, but then it's like the recovery, the next day, the four games and five nights, the back-to-back, like, you know, not that he would play all that, but it is always an adjustment. And it just seems like if they were a Paul George away from being a title contender this year, yeah, roll the dice. Because I just, like, you don't have that
window
open. But
only if he's
open.
Healthy, though. Because, I mean, this
well,
is
right,
a 24-year-old
yeah, no, it's got, you have to be,
right? Like,
you have to be completely responsible and have, like, the right perspective on it to risk something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not throwing him out there if he's like, oh, I don't know if I can jump. You know, you got to be sure that he
right.
that he passes every physical needed.
And that was part of it too. Like, I did the story. I didn't block quote like everything that was said in the Indianapolis Star article. But if you go back and read the original story, like, they're kind of observations from watching little bits of practices. Like the end of it when he's just playing one-on-one with people or doing drills, and the media can actually see that.
Yeah.
And even in that, apparently, I mean, I'm not in Indiana, but apparently he's looked slow and he's looked just not the same as before, which is fine. Like, that's expected. It's just, like, if that's the case, then it doesn't really make sense to rush anything. I think it's cool that the Pacers have done this, as we've talked about. Like, I neither of us expected it, but I don't think you overreact to it and say, oh, well, now suddenly the East is wide open. We can just throw Paul George back in there and maybe we can take down the Cavs. It's like, first of all, no, you can't.
Right. And, like, that's a lot to do.
Even if you could, that's just a huge unnecessary risk.
Well, right? And you're going to take down the Cavs and then the Hawks? And then, you know,
sure.
Like, it's just, I mean, you have to think, like, what's the realistic ceiling and at what point is it not worth it?
Yeah, and I think it's actually, like, things looked really bleak in Indiana, like, especially at the start of the season. But I doubt they're having that much remorse about the Stevenson thing, considering how his season has gone. And I think some of their role players have been able to grow, and George Hill is, I mean, the talk around George Hill was always, like, oh, if he can be more aggressive, then he can be something different. And I think he's done that lately. And I think just, like, they can legitimately, if they make a couple of minor moves and shake things up a little bit in the summer, with the experience that some of these guys had and putting Paul George back in the mix, I think this could be, like, one of the better teams in the East next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they weren't that far last year from, you know, I mean, they fell apart, but they were still the number one seed. They still got to the conference finals. Like, they weren't that far. And then, heading into, you know, next season, assuming they keep the core and, like, David West is still healthy enough to do all this and
right.
Roy Hibbert is still good and George Hill can still keep this up and Paul George can come back as himself. You know, they've got some good role players around all those guys. They may be able to acquire one player that at least puts them back where they were.
Right.
I don't think that's out
of their defense is going to be great.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like just about can you make the offense a little bit better? And
right.
George should make it a lot better.
Right.
So, yeah, I think, yeah, they're one of the – it's like I don't know how many people are actually watching Pacers games on League Pass, and I don't blame you because it's not like they're winning, like, beautiful games. But it is a kind of cool little story in the East right now, I would say.
Yeah, it is a cool little story. Hey, speaking of cool little stories, you had an Aaron Aflalo conversation.
I did have an Aaron Aflalo conversation.
With Aaron Aflalo.
And it – I'll tell you, that conversation was very different than the last few Aaron Aflalo conversations that I've had, because I like he's one of the smarter guys in the NBA, and I generally, when he's come through, I've tried to talk to him. But honestly, I don't remember the last time that one of his teams came to Toronto and won. Mm. So, and he takes losses hard. So, and I think he was just really not happy with the situation in Denver. In Orlando, I think at first it was exactly what he wanted, because he was the kind of guy that got to, like, that was the first time he really got to be sort of a first or second or third option on a team, and put up some big scoring numbers and get to have the ball in his hands a bit more. I think he liked it at first, but then once it became clear that the team wasn't really going anywhere, I think he seemed happy to be out of there, and then almost as quickly as he seemed happy to be in Denver, he seemed wanting to be out of there. Now in Portland, I mean, this is a situation where they're counting on him for a lot, and there's kind of a lot of pressure for him to step into Matthew's shoes and be that guy who's going to be dependable on both ends of the floor. But I think he's really relishing it. Like, just talking to him, he was in a great mood after a good road win. The Blazers have, I think they've won 8 of 9 games. They're a game out of the second spot in the West. Everything's going really well for them. They had a little bit of a slump before that winning streak, but I think despite, like, the numbers, if you look at a follow-up numbers, I put this in the piece, like, they're not going to blow you away. His field goal percentage has been low, but he's been hitting threes and he's been playing good defense, and I think he really fits there. And he's just super happy to be in a locker room with, like, veterans and stars, and there's not this, like, dysfunctional atmosphere like there was in Denver. And I mean, he can be a free agent this summer. I'm assuming he will opt out of the $7.5 million that he could make next year. But, like, the way this is going, especially if they have a good run in the playoffs, like, you could see him just staying a Blazer. And I think he fits in really well with the way that they play. And he's just an interesting player because I think if they hadn't made that trade, then Portland would be pretty much screwed right now, because Matthews meant so much to that team. And they're just, they got really lucky that they were able to put a kind of, what, like a B-plus version of Matthews into their starting lineup.
Yeah, and it is really interesting just because it was always going to be like, oh, Aflalo could be insurance in case Wes Matthews costs too much this summer, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're probably going to keep Wes, but, you know, they at least have that option to kind of, you know, have a checks and balance system, or at least a backup system that could really be fruitful for them. And then it turns out, like, oh, less than a week later, they need him to be the insurance policy now.
Yeah.
And you know, some of this stuff can sound cliche, but with, you know, knowing what I know about Aflalo and what you said, like, he does seem to, like, that guy is really fueled by being in a situation where he can win.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, he does take those losses. Like, he's really hard to talk to after a loss. And
he after a loss, he will make no eye contact with you.
Yeah.
Head will be down. He'll still, like, he's just, like, if you get him talking about basketball, he'll give you good stuff. But it's just, like, that was a totally different experience yesterday.
After, yeah.
Like, he was just, like, eye contact, he's smiling, he's happy to talk, he's saying, he's, like, raving about his teammates and the team and how they've welcomed him. And yeah, like, it took a toll. Like, those were, I mean, the Orlando thing, I think, was something that he thought was going to be different than it was. And, like, everybody thought Denver was going to be different than what it ended up being this season.
Right. Yeah, it's, especially, like, just, I would imagine, like, especially in season, going from such a chaotic, just cesspool of turmoil, which, I mean, that's what the Nuggets were. Like,
yeah,
they've just been
yeah.
a disaster in terms of just a psychological standpoint, having to deal with their own stuff, having to deal with Brian Shaw's stuff, having to deal with, you know, are they going to blow the team up, or are they going to fire Shaw, or are they going to do both? Or, you know, and you go, you know, he went from a really good situation in Denver to a disappointing situation with Orlando for him, from like an individual standpoint. Great, he got to shoot a bunch and score, but he didn't really get to play for anything. And then you go back to Denver and you're like, hey, they had the down year because of injuries, but now he can really play for something like he did before in Denver. And then it's just that crap. And then to just leave that midseason and be able to go to a Portland situation where they're head over heels for all their players.
Yeah.
They have that respect. They have the support. They're playing for something. They have a chance at competing for the title.
They have an identity.
Right. They have an identity. They play a certain way. They don't deviate from that. Like, there's just all this stuff, all this good stuff building towards a much more positive work experience for him. And then that allows you to play, you know, a better brand of basketball in theory. Like, yeah, he hasn't been great in Portland, but it takes the time for adjustment. Yeah, and he fits. Yeah, that's the great way to put it. Like, he fits that. He fits everything they want to do.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like, you could, if you didn't watch, like, if you just looked at the numbers, like, even if you did watch and you saw him missing mid-range shots, like, whatever, fine. Like, he admitted it's been an adjustment, and he's still working on being comfortable, but everybody's really trying to help him. And he's getting 30-plus minutes a game now because of the Matthews situation, which is obviously it's not what he wanted or anybody wanted to happen, but he's going to be more comfortable in the starting lineup, which is where he's been for the last 5 years, and this is now he's in a better situation than he has been ever, really, in his career. Because when he started in Detroit, those weren't bad teams, but he was just learning the NBA and didn't really. He was more of a defensive player than anything. Didn't really get to do anything on offense. Now, you know, he's not the go-to guy at all, but he's smart enough to know he can play off of Lillard and Aldridge and get really good looks. And, like, that's the one thing he has done extremely well, is he's shooting, 41.5% on his threes.
Yeah, and
he can just be a really good spot-up shooter for that.
Right, and, I mean, God, everything they do, the spacing is so important. And so if he he's not going to replace the shooter Matthews was, but if he gives you, 80% of what that player was, or even 60% of what Matthews meant for them in terms of spacing, it helps them fuel that system even more.
Yeah. And just watching them yesterday, the way that they move the ball, the way that they make you pay if you make one little mistake, this is not a new thing, but they're really fun to watch, and they've grown a lot defensively. And I think he's been a guy that's had a weird defensive reputation in the NBA, because I think the way he started his career was oh, this is one of the best wing defenders in the league. And then it was oh, now he's not trying as hard on defense or whatever. But if he is given a matchup against a really good scorer, he will really compete against that. And I think there was a game against the Rockets last week where he and Batum, I think, shared responsibility on Harden. But when he was on Harden, he really was in his jersey and making him take tough shots. And that, I don't think he's as good a defender as Matthews, but he can do the same sort of thing, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, completely agree. I know you got to get out of here. I'm going to stick around and do expert picks, but we can follow you on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA and read all your stuff on CBSSports.com. James, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, now that James is gone, we're going to do the expert picks. You can find expert picks on CBSSports.com. Chris Towers and I do a video, 3 days a week, and Matt Moore's picking games all the time. And, you can check out the scoreboard with the lines. We'll start off with the Toronto Raptors at the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are 5.5-point favorites in this one. I know the Pacers have been going really well. I know the Raptors have been hit or miss, and mostly miss over the last few weeks, but I think I like the Raptors not only to cover in this game, but to win. So I'm going to pick them to be the upset underdog there. The Portland Trail Blazers are at the Washington Wizards. Wizards are 2-point favorites. I like Portland here. Washington's kind of getting it together, and maybe not so bad as they were around the All-Star break. But this Portland team is just a better basketball team, and I can't imagine that the home court advantage is going to be enough for the Wizards to not only win, but win by at least 2 points. So give me the Blazers. We've got Philadelphia 76ers. traveling to the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are 8.5-point favorites. That's too many points, even with the Celtics playing so well. I'm going to go the Sixers to cover. I do think the Celtics win, but the Sixers team is still better than people give them credit for. I don't think the Celtics blow them out, even at home. Cleveland Cavaliers at the Miami Heat. I will be at this game. I believe LeBron James is expected to play, but he had the knee injury on Sunday, so we're not quite sure yet. I'm sure he's a game time decision. Cavaliers are 2.5-point favorites against Miami. Miami played them really tough when they were here for Christmas. It was a great story. They got their closure, and they got to win and all this stuff. I think Cleveland's going to blow them out tonight, and it's a 5.5-point game. 5.5-point favorite for Cleveland. I think Cleveland wins this one by double digits and quite easily with the way they're playing. Brooklyn Nets at the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Nets are 2.5-point favorites. We don't know who is playing for the Wolves. They were missing Gary Neal, Ricky Rubio, Kevin Garnett, Peck, Anthony Bennett, Shabazz is out, Robbie Hummel's out. Like, they're missing a lot of guys. If they were healthy, I'd like the idea of them covering against Brooklyn, but Brooklyn should be able to handle them and win by at least 3 points. Denver Nuggets, they're scrappy Denver Nuggets on a back-to-back in Memphis. Memphis 12-point favorites. That's too many points for me, even with as weird as Denver has been. Memphis may be resting people, even if they're at full strength. They've got to get back into a rhythm. I'm going to say Denver covers, but Memphis wins. The Oklahoma City Thunder are at Dallas. This is a back-to-back for Oklahoma City. Dallas Mavericks are 6-point favorites. I think the Thunder win this game. They really need this game. They're a game up on the Pelicans, but a win here would give them some nice breathing room to where one loss doesn't put them back under the Pelicans, because the Pelicans do have the tiebreaker, I believe. So even if it's going to be close, I think the Thunder can keep this within six, and I think they win the game. So give me the Thunder. The Charlotte Hornets are at the Utah Jazz. Don't know if Al Jefferson is playing. Kemba Walker is back. The Jazz are 4-point favorites. I think I like the Jazz to win here and to cover. They're just playing really excellent basketball lately. The Atlanta Hawks are at the Sacramento Kings. The Hawks are 5-point favorites. The Hawks should blow them out. I know they've also been a little tricky lately. They had that loss to the big loss to Denver. But in Sacramento, I don't know how you think that this Kings team can stop anybody from Atlanta. Even if Atlanta is resting guys, the system should be too good, and I think they blow the Kings out. And then the last game, biggest line, the Lakers at the Warriors. Warriors are 18-point favorites. It's, I believe, the second biggest line we've seen this year, with 19.5 being the other one, shared by a couple of teams. I don't know. The Warriors may not play everybody, but I still think that they're going to destroy this Lakers team. They did lose to them earlier, but their two wins over the Lakers, they won by at least 21 points in both games. So I'm going to pick the Warriors to blow them out, to play most of their players, and to win big. That's going to be all from us today on Monday. You can follow me on Twitter at TalkHoops, follow at CBS Sports NBA, read our stuff on CBSSports.com. If you have a question for the show, you can email it to zach.harper@cbsinteractive.com, or you can tag it on Twitter with the hashtag EOBpod. We will answer whatever you throw at us, as long as it's appropriate. Even if it's not appropriate, still might answer it. You can subscribe on iTunes, 5-star review, 4-star review. Just leave a review and please subscribe. We appreciate the support, and that's going to do it.